Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dr. Ray Smith, Extension Forage Specialist, to discuss the importance of frost seeding clover in pastures and hayfields, as well as covering winter grazing options. As always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How you doing, Jay?
I am doing the best. How's Vicki today?
I'm doing well. I cannot complain.
Good. That's a good thing. It's been a while since all three of us have been together to do this, so we're grateful we all get that opportunity. So we've got a guest with us this week. Dr. Ray Smith is with us, Extension Forage Specialist for University of Kentucky and stationed in Kentucky. Being in western the part of the state, we work with a lot of our specialists in and around Princeton, but it's good to get up here in this Lexington area and get with some of you and talk to some different folks for a change. Welcome, Ray.
Good to be here. Glad to have you guys up here in Lexington, but I sure enjoy getting out to western Kentucky and the beautiful countryside out there.
We like having you out there. If you don't mind, for some of those who may not have had a chance to work with you some, tell us just a little bit about yourself and your time that you've been at UK and your background and so forth.
I've been at UK now 17 years. Spent a few years at Virginia Tech before that, and then started my career at University of Manitoba in Canada. I will tell people some advice. We're originally from Georgia, so I don't advise people to move from Georgia after Christmas and arrive in Manitoba right above North Dakota December 29th, because there's a little difference between 50 degrees in Georgia and 40 below in Manitoba.
I guarantee it. Yeah.
So, but we enjoyed our time up there. But yeah, it was a bit different.
Probably took just maybe a week or so to acclimate to the new temperatures up there.
Well, we were in shock for at least a week.
Yeah, I would think so.
But no, you don't really acclimate. You just keep putting on more clothes.
I guarantee it. Yeah, I would not do well up there. I would not fare well in the cold weather for sure.
I like it cold. I always have. But as the years go by, I'm less tolerable of the cold than I was at one time. I still don't like the heat. I don't want it. Once it gets above 75, for me, that's hot. But anyway, glad to have you and glad to have you here. And certainly have been proud to have you at the University of Kentucky all these years. We've done a lot of work together. I was fortunate at one time to serve on the Forage and Grasslands Council, and you and I worked together a lot during that time. And been a lot of fun had at events like that through the years.
Very much so, yeah. Glad being here.
You know, we're thinking about the time of the year being midwinter right now, January. We'd like to talk a little bit about frost seeding clover in pastures. So, you know, for those out there who are interested in that, just what are some of the things folks need to know about or take into effect before they start something like that?
So, first of all, one of the best ways to improve your pastures, and for that matter, your hay fields, is adding clover. You get free nitrogen, you get added quality, you get dilution of the tall fescue. We've even learned in recent years from the USDA group here in Lexington that red clover has some, we might call them, even call them medicinal compounds. One's called biocannon A that will dilate blood vessels that fescue has constricted and that will improve the efficiency of digestion, almost like a antimicrobial, like a rimensin, that it has that same kind of effect. So several benefits of clover over what some of us just think about. So probably most people out there will agree they'd like to have clover in their pastures. And fortunately, one of the best ways and easiest ways to get clover in pasture is frost seeding. Putting clover on the ground, on top of the soil, in typically we say mid-February, into February, even early March. But you want to still have at least 4 to 6 weeks of potential frost at night, because what's burying the clover is when the soil freezes, it kind of honeycombs or swells up, as people have seen. And then when it thaws, then it shrinks back down. And over a few frost-freeze cycles like that, it will bury the seed. There was a researcher, Dale Wolf at Virginia Tech. He didn't publish this research, but I remember the years I was there, he talked about They did a study comparing frost seeding clover and drilling clover. So you drill clover. If you're going to drill it, you'd wait a little bit later in March. There's no point. Mm-hmm. You don't need to put it out there in middle of February. They got about 80% of the success with frost seeding of drilling, of going to all the effort to drill. And obviously, if you plant anything in the late summer, early fall, you're going to have to drill, whether it's clover mm-hmm. or grass seed.
Right.
But frost seeding works quite well with clover because clover is a small seed. It's a round seed, so it'll kind of bury with that frost action. Grasses don't do as well frost seeding. Some people will do that, but it's more like a kind of a 50-50. But as I said, you've got kind of a 80% success rate with frost seeding. But you've got to do it right. One of the big things is the clover seed needs to hit bare soil. So that's not hard. If you've had a pasture that you've been grazing through the winter, maybe you've been feeding some hay out there, you're going to probably have some bare soil. With the dry fall we had this past fall, then there is a lot of bare soil. But if you've got residue there or you've got excess growth, clover seed doesn't hit the soil, and so the frost action is not going to bury it. So the big thing is that you've got bare soil, you're putting the clover seed out there on top of the soil, and you're letting that frost action bury it. And then as the grass gets growing, so you move into the clover is not really going to germinate till we probably get to mid-March. Grass starts growing mid into March, growing really hard, growing strong through April. The clover seed's very small. So the next thing besides putting it on bare soil is making sure when you get there in late April and the grass is up tall to do a quick grazing, kind of take that grass down so it's not shading out the clover. And one or two quick grazings, you know, into April, sometime in May, gives that clover a chance. And then you pretty well go back to your normal rotational grazing system and with the benefit of having that added clover in there.
Dr. Smith, I know that a lot of times when we're seeding clover and we do seed into some grass that may be just a tick taller than mm-hmm. what we had some cows running on that's pretty short. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, you know, would you kind of recommend maybe running a pasture drag over that if you was to sow it in clover, you know, to try to get that seed down towards the soil? Would that be a good thing to do or
it,
not?
It would be. So a drag, particularly if there's kind of thatch on the surface, break up that thatch so you yep. get some bare soil there. If the ground's not too wet, you can even go over there and bush hog and take some of that dried out material down. Mm-hmm. You know, even that area that you want to graze and you say, well, there's not much useful forage there, it's kind of dried up over winter, put cattle out there and kind of force them to eat it down a little mm-hmm. bit. Mm-hmm. And really one of the best places to frost seed clover is where you've stockpiled tall fescue. Now again, with the dry fall, you might not have a lot of fescue, but if you can get out there and graze whatever's there in late December and January and mm-hmm. in early February, then they're getting some value out of that fescue or the other grass that's there, plus they're grazing it down, giving some bare soil. And I know Chris Toitz there in Princeton, the forage specialist, often talks about, you know, even leaving the cattle out there a little bit after you frost seed to clover. They get a little trampling action to bury the seed. You just don't yeah. want to leave them out there when the clover seed's starting to germinate because they'll start trampling those little seedlings.
Sure.
No, absolutely. And you know, when they graze that down doing the stockpile deal, which mm-hmm. we do that at home, you know, when you graze that down, that is a perfect seed bed mm-hmm. once you mm-hmm. get it grazed off because, you know, you're strip grazing, so you're giving them enough grass for about 2 or 3 days and you're moving off. Well, they're going to eat pretty well everything that's there if you've got enough cows and you leave them, you know, 2 or 3 days or whatever for mm-hmm. the amount of ground that you're giving them. So it's a perfect seed bed. It works as good as any system that I've ever tried.
Yeah. And I know some people have told me, well, I put clover over my whole farm every year, and yeah, that works, but that means that all of your whole farm needs to be grazed down close, which that means that some fields won't come back as quickly. So ideally, red clover seed, you it's only going to live about 2.5-3 years if you buy a good variety, even if you buy a good variety. So you'd say I need to be doing frost seeding red clover about every 3 years, but we typically tell people do some Ladino white clover, the bigger type white clover, and red clover. 6 to 8 pounds of red clover, 1 to 2 pounds of Ladino white clover. Do them both together. The white clover handles grazing. The red clover gives the added yield plus those added benefits I mentioned earlier. So if you every third year or every 3 years, different pastures, you put some clover seed down. So that one area, you decide ahead of time, okay, I'm going to stockpile that area, let it grow up. That may be one-third of my farm or one-third of my pastures. So I'm going to have use of that. I'm not going to be using it in the fall, but I'll have use of stockpile grazing. I'll put clover down there. I've got a better chance for the clover to grow. I've got the added manure on that field that's going to help the clover grow. You're better to do it that way than just try to put a little bit of seed out over the whole area.
Yeah. Each year we get a question. I always get a question about, you know, seeding the clover, you know, on a snow, you know. Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit about that. I know we're talking about frost, but particularly, you know, if we do get a snow and seeding it that way.
Yeah, so putting it on snow has several advantages. One, you can tell where you've been a lot better. you know there's some moisture. So if the soil, top of the soil is really dry, you're not going to get that frost action. So you know there's going to be some moisture. So, you know, the clover seed on top of the snow is not going to do anything. But when that snow melts and gets into the soil and then you get that freezing action, that honeycombing, you're burying the seed. So that's really a good practice for a few reasons. Though, you know, you don't need to wait for snow. It's more important to get it out there, you know, even early February. You know, not waiting too long. We've had some early springs, and if we get warm weather too soon, you don't have enough of the frost action to bury the seed. Yeah.
That's one of the advantages I've always thought about with frost seeding is a lot of times if we have our normal temperatures, we have a little wider window of being able to get it over, get it across the ground. When we talk about drilling a little later in the spring, sometimes moisture, you know, rain, springs like we had this last spring, that makes for a really narrow window of being able to get over it with a drill.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe even impossible.
Exactly right, Jay. And we've had a lot of springs that trying to get out the tractor in a heavy no-till drill, you're going to be into April almost.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to exaggerate, but often it's hard to find that window. So frost seeding is something that you can have a little cyclone seeder behind an ATV, get over some pretty wet ground. If you don't have a lot of acreage, even with the little broadcast seeder that you walk it on, I know a number of farmers that they'll even do that, or get one of your kids to sit on the back of the ATV with that little hand spreader.
Yeah. Yeah. I've sat on the tailgate of a truck and done that.
So a lot of ways to frost seed. The important thing is just making sure that you're getting it to soil, and something that is also important is that clover needs a higher pH than grasses do. So you may say, well, I've got a good grass stand there. I need to add clover. But you need to check that pH, and if it's down to the low fives, the clover's probably not going to establish or not do well. So you want to get the pH above 6 to get the clovers established. You want the phosphorus and potassium to be at the recommended levels as well. Again, there's no point putting clover seed if you don't have that pH and fertility. That's another thing about talking about one-third of your farm. You can choose the fields. Like fertilizer prices are high now and seem like they're going to stay high a little bit. Then if you soil test and find out the levels, the pH levels and the P and K levels, and you find fields that are in good shape, then those could be ones to put a priority on. Those fields that the pH is low, then maybe you say, well, I'm going to wait, or I'm going to, well, you just need to make sure you get the pH up. Fortunately, lime hasn't gone up as much. I mean, applying it's a little higher with gas prices, but it hasn't gone as much as the other fertility. But you want not only the pH above 6, but you want the P and K levels at recommended levels, which typically we'd say are in the medium or higher.
Yeah. Another strategy that we used last spring is that we went over several acres with clover seed because of nitrogen prices, because of not having to put that nitrogen on those pastures fields that, you know, we saved our nitrogen for our hay fields instead of doing that on our pasture fields. So I think it was a decent strategy, and it seemed to work pretty good this last spring. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully folks need to think about that as well.
No, exactly. And it's pretty incredible the kind of savings you can have from the free nitrogen from the clover. So not only do you have that quality forage, but you're putting nitrogen in the ground. I mean, if you think about red clover, if it's one-third of a stand, so you can have 50 to 100 pounds of nitrogen added for free. Now, if you had a pure red clover stand, you could have 200 pounds of nitrogen, but we're not doing that. But with white clover, red clover mixture like that, 50 to 100 pounds of free nitrogen. With nitrogen being close to a dollar a pound, you know, you're talking an incredible savings. And another important point I want to make, and I alluded to it a little bit ago about, I said even improved red clover varieties will only live 2.5 to 3 years. But unimproved red clover is only going to last about a year to year and a half. And when I say unimproved, it's not going to say in the bag unimproved red clover. It's going to say common red clover or variety not stated. And that typically is a medium-type red clover that's seeds grown in Canada. They can do pretty good seed yields. It'll work. I mean, it'll work that first year. But in fact, for my time in Canada, they call it a one-cut red clover or short-term red clover. So it works if you were going to just plow down the red clover. But for our situations in pasture, we want an improved variety. You can look at our forage variety test. Google KY Forage is to get to our website, and you can see the variety test as one of the tabs there. Look for those improved varieties. Or even if you don't do that, making sure you check with the seed company, you know, is this an improved variety that you've got some yield information? And if you buy the old variety, Kinlan, it's still a good variety. You want to make sure that you get certified seed of Kinlan because of its name and people knowing about it. Number of times you can buy Kinlan written on the bag, but unless it has that blue certified seed tag, it's probably not Kinlan. Many of the companies now will sell the varieties. I mean, definitely corn and soybeans. Rarely do they go to the effort of getting that certified seed tag. A lot of companies in the forage business, the same thing. So if you're buying an improved variety, a recent release from a company, I'm not as worried about the certified seed tag, as long as you have assurance that the reputation of that company. But with Kinlan or other varieties like Potomac Orchard Grass, or you want to make sure you have that blue certified seed tag.
And on going back to the clover and seeding, and you know, sometimes you have the best intentions of doing the frost seeding, and you know, things just don't work out. You know, and you may have a day job and it just didn't work out, and you've cattle's on the side. You know, if you're gonna drill it, you know, we just need to make sure that you calibrate that drill, because you know, a lot of times those drills, the little charts aren't always exactly. It's not going to put out the rate that you think it's going to. So go ahead and take the time to make sure you calibrate that drill before you seed that too, just to make, you know, just extra insurance there to make sure you get a good stand.
Yeah, Vicki, very good point. And Dr. Chris Toits there in Forest Specialists in Princeton, I mentioned earlier, has a great instructional video. It's just about a 10-minute video on how to calibrate a seed drill. If you go to that KY Forage's website, look under establishment. You'll see that video there, plus a lot of other YouTube videos, and he has a nice little chart to use. Now, you may see the video and say, that sounds complicated, but if you do nothing more than say, I'm going to put 20 pounds of seed in, and I want to seed that you got red and white clover mixed, and I want to go 8 pounds of red clover and 2 pounds of white clover, that's 10 pounds. So that 20 pounds should go 2 acres. And so then keep track. Did it go 2 acres? Did it go more than that? You know, you can do it in kind of a crude way like that. The calibration Chris describes is best, but some way keeping track of it. Just this couple of months ago, a farmer was telling me about seeding alfalfa, and he seeded 2/3 of the acres. I think he was planning for about 30 acres, and he got 20 acres, and his seed ran out. And so he had some pretty expensive alfalfa seed.
Pretty thick.
He had to go buy some more.
That's right.
You'd rather seed a little low and then go back over the other direction than get too high.
Going back to your point about buying certified seed and those type of things, you know, last winter we had a bit of a shortage on clover seed. So this is – and we've been talking, you know, the whole time we've done our podcast, we've talked to folks about having a strategy. You know, and think about things way ahead of time before you need them. So that may be something. As do you hear anything from that standpoint?
We expect the seed to still be tight, at least the improved varieties. Companies can often get in seed from here or there. Like, you know, maybe they get extra loads from New Zealand, but it's not always adapted to our winters. So, you know, if you can go ahead and buy clover seed, it's going to last fine through the winter. or even if you don't buy it, you talk to your seed company and say, I need you to hold me back this much seed of this variety. Because not only, you know, you may get to February and you may can buy clover seed, but those improved varieties or that certified Kinlan is quite a good chance that that won't be available. And the seed production areas out in the western U.S., out in Oregon, they've had a number of issues the last few years with drought, with competition from high-value crops like hazelnuts. So really, I'd say across the board with forage seed, you need to be prepared ahead of time and not just think about going out there the week before you need it to the seed store.
Yeah. What percentage? We had some training last fall on, you know, doing some just looking at some pasture and seeing how much clover was in there. What percentage, when you're looking at a clover or looking at a hay field or a pasture field, there's probably a difference there. What percentage of clover do you need to have? Or when you look at it, you go, I got a pretty good stand of clover. You know, I've got a good mix there. What percentage of that pasture, what percentage needs to be clover, what percentage needs to be grass?
So we often talk about if you've got 25 to 30% clover, you know, either in a hay field or in a pasture, then that's going to provide the nitrogen that grass needs. You're not going to get much more yield from applying nitrogen plus the expense. Now, the tricky thing is, clover is a broad leaf. Grasses are a narrow, upright leaf. So when you look down at a stand, if you're standing up and you're looking down and you're trying to estimate how much clover is there, to get that 25 or 30%, it's going to look like more than that. So just visually, if you're trying to say how much of the area, and we like to put down a grid, a 1 foot square grid or bigger, so you're looking in a specific area, and you really want to kind of look at it and say about 50% of that area is covered with clover leaves and the others grass leaves, and that's probably going to get you about that 30%, if that makes sense. Because when we talk about 25, 30, we're talking about of kind of the weight of the forage.
That's what I was going to say.
It's by the volume.
Yeah, by volume. Volume, it's a weight. Yeah.
You mentioned the grid. I know in the past in the grazing schools we've had used these small squares made out of PVC pipe. David and I were talking here a while back and talking about how easy those are to assemble and how that would be a good giveaway at some of our forage-related meetings for producers to use.
Nope.
I know myself, I've used them in the past. It's one of the easiest tools in the world. You can keep it behind the seat of your truck. And I've used it like throwing a Frisbee. You just toss it out to an area, you measure that area. And you can take random samples around a field as you walk around. And very, very useful tool.
Yeah, exactly, Jay. So if you're going to measure how much clover is out there, then a grid or at least walk to different areas in the field. And just like you're taking a soil test, you know, you want to take 10 or 20 cores in that field randomly throughout the field, the same way if you're estimating how much clover is there, you want to walk through the field. In fact, if you're estimating, you know, you're trying to say, should I spray for weeds or not? If you just look at one spot, it may be the worst place in the field, but the whole field may not have weeds that bad. So you can estimate weeds that way too. You know, a small percentage of weeds, 10 or 15%, particularly if they're ones that cattle will eat, that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is when you get weeds that, you know, the tall ironweed or horse nettle that they won't eat that have issues, then that's where you look at it. And I should mention something here because it fits in with what we're talking about, frost seeding clover. Late February, early March is a good time for winter annual weeds and some real problem weeds that have been cropping up in the last few years, like buttercup. Hitting that buttercup seed can germinate through the fall and even the winter. So really the time to get that is that late winter, early spring. But once you frost seeded clover, then there's no herbicide available in the market right now that you can use that won't kill that clover. And some of the herbicides that have a long residual action, if you use those in the fall, you can't frost seed clover. So you want to check the label really closely. And the time to clean up weeds in the field that you want to add clover to is really the previous summer or early fall. And then you've knocked those weeds out. Maybe that's going to even help your stockpiled fescue grow.
Right.
You graze that down, you put the clover in. So again, strategically think about taking care of weeds.
Yep.
And you can't do both together. The company Corteva should soon be selling a product that's called ProClova that is safe on white clover, meaning it doesn't, it just limited damage to white clover grows out of it. They've got all the research and all the development work. They're just waiting for the final EPA approval, but it will kill red clover. So it's not a magic thing, and I'm not sure quite the stage, but I'm sure that you can't put it on just very little white clover. So it would be something once clover is established and you've got a weed problem cropping up, that it would be an option when it's available. It's not available yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you come in, you know, when the white clover tends to last a little bit longer than red clover. So if you had a red clover stand that had played out, and you still had a little bit of white clover, that'd be a great option right there.
Exactly.
And I really thought you were supposed to spray buttercup in May.
Well, you definitely see buttercup in May. You see all those yellow flowers.
That's when you see everybody spraying. That's Dr. right.
Well, and you know, you do see an effect when you spray in May. I mean, the plants wilt down. The problem is once you've got flowers, then the seed is already developing. So you feel like you're doing something, but
makes you feel better not doing anything.
No, and I tell people, you know, they say, well, maybe, you know, buttercup when it's tiny, I can't tell what it is. But if you've had a real problem with buttercup in that pasture in the past few years, then it's probably going to be a problem again. Yep, so you're probably pretty safe to spray that field.
You know, we were talking about estimating amounts of clover in a field using a square foot. You touched on a topic, and I've talked about this in the past, of how you can use that to scout for weeds as well. One of the things that I've recommended to producers, if they wanted to do that, is to do that multiple times of the year, because we deal with a lot of different times of the weeds. We have summer annual weeds, we have winter annual weeds. You can't do it one time and expect to cover everything that's out there. The buttercup, for instance, if you wanted to do that in, you know, sometime in late February, you're going to actually see those plants out there, because they'll already emerge sometimes.
That's right.
In the winter. And a producer said one time, well, just like you mentioned, David, he said, well, I can't tell what they are until I see that yellow flower. True. But for most producers, they can tell what grass is and what clover is. And you can distinguish between the desired species and everything else. So even the folks who can't weed ID, you can ID the grass, you can ID the clover, the things, the desirables, and look for those other things that are not the desirables.
I think it's, you know, to that point is, you know, grain producers, you know, they're kind of used to scouting, or they were, I guess, previous to Roundup Ready. I'll put that in there. scouting, but your livestock folks, you know, maybe not quite as much. And again, you know, where I am, most of the folks that are livestock folks, that's their part time. You know, they've got a full time job that they're working every day, and so their time is limited. And so just having the time to get out there and walk those fields to see what you have. But that's a great point, Jay, is that, you know, getting out and walking your pastures and seeing what you got out there is going to be money in the bank for you if you keep that under control, especially, and then doing these, you know, just like if you going to do the frost seeding of your clover and trying to improve those, it's a multi-step thing. It's like from beginning to end. You know, it's not a one size fits all. You got to be prepared to do it.
And we used to say that if you've got a weed issue, then dig up some of that weed and take it to your county agent, and all of you guys will still take weed ID. Nowadays, often you take a picture with your cell phone. Just make sure it's not blurry, and then send that to your county agent. And there's a couple of programs now. There's one called iNaturalist that National Geographic's put out that is free. You can just download it, and it does a pretty good job of identifying weeds and even pests, bugs and stuff. Another one that's a little bit better but has a subscription fee is called Picture This. So that iNaturalist and Picture This are ways, if you want to kind of educate yourself and get even quicker results. And then if you can't figure it out with those programs, then you can go to your agent. But all of you will help people out. Weeds like buttercup, even at a young stage, are not too hard to tell once you get used to it.
Yeah. You know, I've had some decent luck, Ray, with going in there in February with a Raida 2,4-D and catching, you know, maybe early February, and catching a lot of that buttercup and some of those annual weeds that we think about, thistle. Some of those type things, and getting those knocked out, and then coming in later and drilling the clover. I think there is a a restriction time there that you are?
You've got about a month to wait after 2,4-D if you're going with a lower rate, like a court rate. So that would be an option to.
It seems like it works pretty good, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
That's
as
right.
far as getting Buttercup and some of those annuals out of the way, you know, early.
And, you know, I say late February, early March. We often have warm spells through the winter. In fact, last year after Christmas, there was a warm spell that you could have gotten a lot of weeds.
Yep.
So, we're you know, to kill a lot of these weeds that we have issues with in winter, you know, we're talking about get a few days at 50 and at not much below freezing at night. You know, that's what you need. So.
Yep.
You don't have to wait to a certain date, but you do want those temperatures. You don't want them frozen.
Yeah, we've had some mild Januaries that have been pretty mild that we probably could have gotten some of that done. I think that's right.
I want to back up what David was talking to about spraying during that time of the year. One of the biggest advantages to using a product like 2,4-D during that time of the year is we don't have all of the non-target species like flowers in the yard or a neighboring crop across the field, tobacco, for instance, in the summertime, that we have to worry about drift issues with. Now, it will still drift. You still have to go through all the precautions that you need to minimize drift and mitigate the effects of that drift. But there are a lot less non-target species
that we have
to worry about during that.
And in the winter, you're more worried about, you know, a breeze blowing it. You don't have that volatilization issue that you get in hot weather, hot and humid weather.
Right. So good points for that.
I kind of want to move on to some other questions that we're probably going to be getting, you know, as we move down through the spring is, you know, pasture renovation. You know, maybe last fall was really, really dry. You know, what do I need to do if I feel like, and I don't know as we've killed any fescue because it's so resilient, you know, especially 31. You know, what are some things that we can do maybe this spring to tide us over till next fall even, you know, to be able to hopefully, you know, reseed some pastures?
So let me just mention several things. You can seed grass in the spring. It's just not as good a chance for success because we get into hot weather sooner. The grass is usually not very good size. But if you are going to put grass in the spring, then you're really talking, your goal is kind of mid-March. Drilling it is better. Like I say, it's kind of 50-50 frost seeding. You know, you can try it with your clover, and if it works, great. If it doesn't work, then you get the drill out. So if you've got pastures that you really have a lot of bare soil and you say they're in terrible shape, there's nothing very good growing here, then you could put some grass seed out, some, you know, fescue or orchard grass. Now, since I just said you don't have as good a chance for success as a late summer, early fall seeding with our perennial grasses, a couple of other options. If some of you have been thinking about trying something like crabgrass to have some summer grazing, there are several improved varieties of crabgrass, then onto that bare soil, you can frost seed crabgrass. And it has a dormant seed, and it'll sit there until the soil warms up. Chris Toich in Princeton's been doing some of that frost seeding crabgrass. I mean, you can also plant crabgrass once the soil gets warm, just like you'd seed sorghum sedan grass in May. So, but if you're seeding crabgrass, obviously that's going to be a permanent pasture. It's not something you want to move into crops with later on. But that's an option. Another option for just kind of short term is you could go out there with annual ryegrass. And put that out there. Now, it's only going to live until about early July, but that can be a real short-term solution. And I imagine once things start growing that we will have a lot of bare soil showing. So that's a way to cover a feeding area, to get some quick cover as you're kind of preparing. You say, I know I need to overseed that completely the next fall. Something that has worked well, we've done a lot in our variety testing program, and I know of a number of producers who they're maybe short on hay, and hay prices are high and going higher. And so a real short-term crop that you can even take a hay cutting off of is spring oats. Put those out, drill them out in the field, a thin pasture or a really thin hay field, or maybe an area you've cropped and you're trying to get an emergency crop. You can seed those in mid-March, put on 50, 60 pounds of our units of nitrogen, and 2 months later, have a ton and a half, 2 tons of a high-quality forage. That can be grazed as well. You know, after about a month, you'll have enough growth for grazing. Some people might even mix the oats and the annual ryegrass to get a little quicker growth from the oats. The annual ryegrass will last a little bit better. But again, both of those are short-term temporary, but I think with how dry it was last fall, we're probably going to have to be doing some temporary things till we get our stands back in good shape.
Well, and anywhere there's a bare spot, a weed will come up if you don't do anything.
That's exactly right. kind of funny, but prior to sitting down to record this, David and I were going back and forth about this. I mentioned annual ryegrass. He mentioned spring oats. Mm-hmm. There we are. We've got the combination before us.
Right. When's a good time to go out there in your pastures and go, you know, look around and maybe get the square out and look and go, hey, I'm going to have to do something. When what's the window that you could probably tell for sure that you're going to have to do something different this spring?
It's a little bit tricky in the middle of the winter because, you know, there's not a lot of growth. And in frost seeding, we've talked about that's going to be in mid-February. So I'm going to kind of tell you and thinking ahead of time that it'd be good to be looking in the fall to be deciding what things need work on. Now, often we don't get so cold in the winter that we don't have enough that we can see there. And you can see a lot of those winter weeds there. You can tell if there's going to be a lot of bare soil just because the grass is back. Or you can kind of remember back from that field that you had to overgraze just to hold your cattle. So you can't diagnose as much before frost seeding. Now, as far as something like spring oats, putting that out there, you know, you get a little green up happening in middle of March, and then you can go assess fields, and you say that one field is still really thin. You know, I'm going to put the annual ryegrass or the spring oats in there, or maybe put some crabgrass out there. So once things start greening up, is a better time. In the winter, you just kind of have to make the best of it.
Yeah. I know another good combination that we've used in the past is we've used Marshall ryegrass in the fall, and even some in the spring. Actually, have you know thrown it out there and took a drag and dragged it, drug it in. And anyway, but we've come back in about the middle of June and planted sorghum Sudan grass.
And that's exactly
good grazing,
right.
Just for grazing, that's no right. hay, just for grazing.
Yeah, so. That short term, that annual ryegrass, that spring oats, you can come back in with a summer annual, take two or three grazings of the summer annual or a couple of cuttings if you want to. And then you've kind of smothered out some of the weed issues and you go in there and drill that into your new permanent pasture.
Yep.
Very good idea. And Marshall's a good example of annual ryegrass. There's several varieties that are available. We'd usually think about seeding that in the fall, and you are going to get a lot more spring growth and a little bit of fall growth. But with dry falls, we're going to have to be doing some things in the spring. I should add that every spring people ask me, they'll say, I have some winter wheat left over. What about putting that out there? We put that in our variety trials, and when we'll get 2 tons, sometimes even a little bit more from spring oats, we'll get half a ton from winter wheat because winter wheat needs that winter period to fertilize and produce growth, and you'd be better off to save the seed or feed it to your animals than to put it out there. You'd be better to put a little money out with the spring oats or annual ryegrass and get some production.
Just doesn't have enough time to tiller out and really get growth.
It does have a cold period.
Yeah.
And sometimes rye in the spring will get enough cold weather that it actually will have more growth. But winter wheat, rarely we get enough cold days to put on that kind of growth that it needs. Yeah.
You know, just to circle back real quick, you've mentioned a couple of times already today why we typically have less success frost seeding grass versus clover. If you could talk just a little bit about that grass seed itself. Typically, it likes to be seeded a little bit deeper than clover, and I think that's a lot of the reason why we don't have that success is typically with frost seeding, you're only going to get maybe a quarter of an inch in depth, maybe a little more, but not a lot. And that's typically not enough for grass seed to get a good stand.
We talk about seeding any forage about a quarter to a half inch deep. In the typical grass seeds we're talking about, like fescue and orchard grass, they are better toward that, more toward that half inch depth. The other thing with grass seed is it's really light. And so it'll kind of float on top of the soil. You'll have that honeycombing, and it'll just stay right up there on top. The little round clover seed will fall down in between the cracks, and so it buries itself better than the grass seed. So there's several reasons that grasses don't work as well frost seeding. Again, you know, kind of if you're a betting person and you like 50-50 odds, then you might put a little grass seed out. But I kind of like the odds of 80-90% success rate that you get with frost seeding clover. And I should mention that adding some annual Lespedeza into the fields, particularly that are a little poor soils, maybe you haven't gotten the pH up, it can handle poor fertility soils and lower pH. So one option would be to add in some annual Lespedeza. And it is an annual, but it reseeds itself quite well, adding that in. But with annual Lespedeza, you've got to put out about 15 pounds per acre of that because it's a larger seed. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that 6 to 8 pounds of red clover, 1 to 2 of white clover. And if you've got that poor soils in that field, then maybe that 15 pounds of the annual Lespedeza.
I know we're coming up getting close to our timely tip, Dr. Smith, and I wanted to ask you if folks are going to have to come in and renovate through the summer and then come back in the fall and seed some pastures, what's a good pasture mix? You know, just how many pounds of fescue, how many pounds of orchard grass, you know, clover, et cetera, whatever. What is your ideal pasture mix? Four cows, because I know it's
so
different.
My ideal pasture mix in Kentucky is tall fescue. And a novel endophyte tall fescue doesn't have the toxins of a Kentucky 31, but it has a beneficial endophyte. And I'm saying that seriously, mm-hmm. that fescue is our best grass, the longest growing season. So I would like people to think about, I want to get a good stand of a non-toxic tall fescue. Now, many people like to have a bit of white clover. Some people even like to have a bit of Kentucky bluegrass that can fill in. And so I would say we're typically talking with grass seeding 20 pounds per acre. If I wanted a mixture, I would want to go heavier on the fescue. So I would be 10 pounds of fescue, 5 pounds of orchard grass and Kentucky bluegrass. Or if I was just going with fescue and orchard grass, you know, I'd probably go 12 pounds of fescue and 8 pounds of orchard grass. And often I would rather people with fall seeding, they want to have clover, they want to have grass. I would rather them plant just grass to start with, partly because the clover can get up ahead of it and shade out the grass. The other thing is you get some weed issues. You can't deal with that if you've got clover there. So you could knock the weeds out with a low residual herbicide like 2,4-D in late October, November, and then frost seed your clover in February. So ideally for me is focusing on a good fescue base of an improved fescue, and then less of the other cool season grasses you might mix in there. A lot of seed mixtures you buy at the store will have a proportion of annual ryegrass. And what is, the reason that's in there, a couple of reasons. One is if you've got sloping land, it's going to come up quick. So it kind of makes sense to hold the soil down. The other reason is that the annual ryegrass seed is a lot cheaper than the other grasses. So seed companies will mix that in there. Because it looks great, it comes up quick, yep. and they've got a cheaper mixture, but it's going to choke out the other grasses. So yep. if you're going to have annual ryegrass in with that fall seeding, in your perennial seedings, then really you're talking 15% or less. So you're talking just a few pounds per acre.
Yep. Yeah, you have to be really careful with that because it'll choke it right out. The annual ryegrass will. Yep.
You know, Dr. Smith, we rarely do this show. What we don't think about the next show or another idea for a show, and sitting and listening, I'm thinking at some point we need to have you back on and just do a show about the myths or the facts versus fiction of endophyte and the issues that it causes, the issues that we can live with, because there are a lot that we can live with, depending on whether you're a horse producer, whether you've got beef cattle or dairy cattle. So I'm thinking sometime in the future we want to sit down and have that show. I think that
sounds
would be
good.
A good one. So
I tell you what, you know, we've talked a lot. We've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about it's a multifaceted, you know, when we start talking about renovating these pastures and frost, you know, with the frost seeding, the clover. But if we don't start with a good foundation, all that hard work that we're doing it's not going to pay off for you. And so I think it's about time, I think, for our timely tip.
Absolutely.
And so we want to remind you folks to really make sure that you look at the fertility of your pastures and your hay fields. If you haven't already taken soil tests, go ahead and get those soil tests taken. Take a look at the pH, take a look at the P and K, and see where they are. And make sure you get those where they need to be before you start a new plan on renovating any pastures or doing anything, because it's just like with a house and anything else, you got to start with a good foundation. So you want to add anything?
I think it's an excellent tip. You know, we've talked a lot about pH, and if you do that soil testing right before you're ready to frost seed and you don't have the pH like you want for your clover, I think you leave your seed in the bag. You take the 6 months to get your pH corrected, and then maybe think about fall seeding that clover or frost seeding the next year.
Exactly right. And you may think to yourself, well, I'm not going to soil test because I can't afford the fertilizer. But if you can find out the present fertility and pH of your pastures or your hay fields, and then to decide the ones you're going to focus on, those that are already in good shape, then that's where you spend the money to put the clover seed in. Yep. And then the other ones, you know, you don't put the priority on.
Yep. Maybe do a bale grazing or something like that, even exactly, to try to build those fertility levels.
And the bale grazing is, you know, you're adding fertility. You're adding fertility that's in the hay that's coming out through the manure and the urine. So you're fertilizing that way. And we still have the ability to buy hay in Kentucky, at least prices that are right now, that is less than the cost of fertilizer value of that hay. Now, talk to folks in North Carolina, and hay there, their average 4 foot by 5 foot bales were $60-$65. So make sure you, this is not part of our timely tip, but make sure you get your hay in the barn.
We can add it in there.
Yeah, that's right.
Do that as soon as you can. As the winter progresses, hay is going to get more scarce.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's exactly right. Well, yep. Dr. Smith, we appreciate you so much, you sitting down with us this week, and we want to thank you for being a part of our show. Thank you for all the work you've done for forage producers across the state of Kentucky. And I want to thank our hosts for the information this week, and thank our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for the next episode. Until then, remember...